infinite possibilities. When I was young, I didn't need a wristwatch, for at any time of day or night, you could ask me what time it was and I could tell you exactly. But something happened in my early 20s. It occurred to me that I should not be able to do that and that it was weird that I could. And so, almost as soon as I thought that, I no longer could. We are trained within this world to see ourselves as the ego defines us. According to the ego's dictates, we are small and powerless, surrounded by an infinitely gargantuan and powerful universe. We are here but for a minute before we grow old and suffer and die. We are taught to identify with our guilt more than our innocence, and then we feel haunted by mistakes we feel will dominate the rest of our lives. We're taught to blame others more than to forgive them, and then we get stuck in feelings of victimization. We're taught that we're separate from others, and then we fall prey to grandiosity and insensitivity. We're taught that grades, credentials, past influences, mistakes, marriages, divorces, degrees, resumes, money, parents, children, or houses, whatever label or identity somebody wants to stick onto us, is our essence. And as a consequence, we forget who we really are. This forgetfulness is the source of all evil, for it leaves us in personal darkness, confused about our heritage, our power, and our purpose. The mind cannot serve two masters, and when we forget the true one, we falsely bow before the other. When we mentally identify with the realm of the body, we see a realm of scarcity and death. When we mentally identify with the realm of the spirit, we see endless love, unlimited possibility, and the oneness of all things. The spiritual basis of self-esteem. I've learned, when my life has been most painful, that the me who can be hurt is not the real me. The woman in me, the professional in me, the writer in me, the teacher in me, what do they all mean? Are they not but bricks in a spiritual prison, seeking to circumscribe my life, when in fact a life cannot be circumscribed? What difference does it make if someone betrays me, when my real self, my spirit, cannot be betrayed? Is not an insult an opportunity for me to look at the part of myself that can be insulted and say, "Ha, you're not even the real me"? Is not the true self beyond sickness? Then who is it that gets sick? Is not the true self unlimited? Then who is it that can be imprisoned? Is not the true self eternal? Then who is it that dies? That is the question. Who are we, really? For if we think we are only small and separate mortal beings, then the world we create will reflect that belief. We will live in a world of separation and suffering and death. Yet, when we change our sense of who we are, when we realize we are boundless, unified with all life, then the human experience as we know it transforms. The one exercise repeated in the workbook of A Course in Miracles states the following: I am as God created me. In some essential way, we still are who we were at the moment of our creation, and all problems derive from our forgetting that. If you are as God created you, then no mistakes you have ever made, or anyone's judgments or negative opinions about you, can in any way determine who you are or change your value. In any holy instant, we can remember our divine essence and choose to express it. And whatever we express will be reflected back to us. The universe is always ready to give us new beginnings that reflect our innocence, but we are not always ready to receive them. The sun can dawn, but we don't see it if the drapes are closed. No matter how much God loves us, we don't feel it if we don't believe it. As long as we think that we are less than God's perfect creation, then the experiences we attract to ourselves will be less than God's perfect creation. And as we believe, so shall it seem to be. All of the children of God are special, and none of the children of God are special. You're not better than anyone else, but neither are you worse than anyone else. All of us have special gifts, all of us were born to shine in one way or another, and all of us are innocent in the eyes of God. Look at the children in kindergartens. They're all gorgeous and magnificent, and so are we. It's not arrogant to believe you're infinitely creative, brilliant, potentially perfect through the grace of God. In fact, it would be arrogant to think otherwise, because what God has created cannot possibly be less than perfect. That fact applies to you, and it applies to everyone. True humility is when you accept His gifts, knowing they come from Him, and allow them to be expressed through you. Yet, to the ego, that is not humility, but arrogance, and you deserve a strong comeuppance for daring to believe in yourself. Supporting each other's greatness. We live in a world where judgments are made so quickly and easily. Lies are told about people and printed by an irresponsible press. Anyone can say whatever they want to on their website and appear credible. People tear down other people's reputations like it's a sport. In some environments, we receive basic support, "Go, girl, fly." And in others, we get, "Who the hell do you think you are trying to fly? Get down here, or we'll force you down." When we recognize the vengeance of the ego, how much it detests the spirit of life and love, we more easily avoid personalizing its vicious attacks. And there's learning in anything we go through. Both the challenge and the growth potential that comes from having had others judge you harshly is that it makes you have to decide for yourself what your self-esteem is based on, other people's estimation or God's. The thinking of God is 180 degrees away from the thinking of the world, and one of the many areas where we have things completely upside down is in the area of arrogance and humility. We should never apologize for seeking to actualize the greatness of God that lives in all of us. And those who refuse to support others in manifesting their dreams are only withholding support from themselves. Whatever I refuse to celebrate in your life, I will not be able to draw into mine. My thoughts about you are inseparable from my thoughts about myself. If I won't give you permission to shine, I can't give myself permission to shine either. Today, living out our greatness takes on an urgency beyond fulfilling our individual dreams. Bringing forth our greatness is critical to the survival of the species, for only if you get to live out your potential and I get to live out mine will the world be able to live out its. Since limited thinking produces limited results, supporting others in believing in themselves helps to move the entire world forward. And becoming who we are capable of being, regardless of other people's opinions of us, is part of our responsibility, both to ourselves and to God. Unless we're supporting the emergence of greatness in the people around us, we're not doing our full part to help heal the world. A supportive smile, an email, the smallest gesture can make the difference in helping another person believe in himself or herself. From a material perspective, what we give away, we lose. But from a spiritual perspective, only what we give away do we get to keep. When we're more generous with our support for others, the universe itself shows more support for us. Surrender to our brighter nature. Often we fail to develop an aspect of ourselves simply because no one modeled it for us. If a parent demonstrated success or elegance, then we might have moved toward actualizing those things within ourselves. But if no such model was present, either in the family or in the culture, then we simply didn't build the psychological track for that train. God, however, has built His own. The psyche is like a giant computer with an infinite number of files. Imagine a folder called God's Will, and inside that folder there are various files: me, the strong; me, the self-confident; me, the compassionate; me, the forgiving, etc. Everything that is God's love is present as a file we are free to download, and none of God's files can be deleted. Yet most of us have created some files that should be deleted: me, the arrogant; me, the sarcastic; me, the judgmental; me, the cynical are all examples. They all belong in a folder called My Ego. Imagine Jesus sitting at your computer, highlighting that folder, and hitting the delete key. Me the angry, or me the arrogant, is nothing that has grown to seem like something. It is part of the illusion of the world. It would be easy, however, to convince both ourselves and others that that is who we are if we behave that way. And even if we don't act that way, as long as the file exists, it acts like a seeping mental poison and has the capacity to hold us back. I know that for me, someone constantly telling me I'm not okay is hardly what helps me improve. There is a magical power in relating to the good in people. I read in an interview where the actress Uma Thurman, daughter of renowned Buddhist philosopher Robert Thurman, said, "I guess I've surrendered to my brighter nature." She was taught well, I assume, that there is such a nature. The role of the parent is to see it in the child and reflect it back to her. And that nature exists in all of us. Yet that is a very different psychological approach to change than is normally associated with the Western mind. Usually we think of our negative qualities as something we have to get rid of. And from that comes all manner of dysfunctional parenting systems, educational systems, justice systems, etc. Imagine what the world would be if we looked at each other and thought, "I know there's something wonderful in there." In fact, our need is to claim and cleave to our spiritual potential, no matter whether or not it has yet been activated within our personality. That ultimate potential is our Buddha nature. It is the Christ. To accept Christ is to accept that God's love is in us and in everyone. An eternal light is within us because God put it there. And invoking what we like is far more powerful than trying to destroy what we don't like. For in the presence of our light, our darkness disappears. Actors embody a character by finding its life force within their own. It's not so much another person as it's another dimension of their own selfhood that the great actor inhabits. And most of us, whether we're actors or not, have dimensions of selfhood unexplored for no other reason than that we simply haven't chosen to. In Alcoholics Anonymous, it's said that it's easier to act yourself into a new way of thinking than it is to think yourself into a new way of acting. Just as children learn from playing, so do adults when we allow ourselves to. We vastly underestimate the ability of our subconscious mind to support us in creating change. Fake it till you make it is often good advice. When little girls play house or little boys play Spider-Man, they're following a subconscious strategy of personality development, using their imaginations to prepare for new realms of being. And we need never stop doing that unless we choose to. Practice kindness, and you start to become kind. Practice discipline, and you start to become disciplined. Practice forgiveness, and you start to become forgiving. Practice charity, and you start to become charitable. Practice gentleness, and you start to become gentle. Just push the button of the self you wish to be, and the file appears. It was already there, after all, just waiting to be brought down. It doesn't matter whether you're in the mood to be gracious to the bus driver today. Do it anyway, and watch how it begins to affect your mood. We become gracious when we decide to be gracious. We have the power to generate as well as react to feelings, to hone our personalities as we travel through life. In the words of George Eliot, "It is never too late to become what you might have been. It is never too late to become who we really are."